Good morning. My Bible reader is out of town, and I looked it over, and I didn't really have a real pertinent verse to be read, so I decided I would just go without this morning. And so I'm going to continue a series that I began 2 weeks ago, focusing on people that knew better, but made bad decisions, had bad judgments, and what we can learn from those bad decisions, those poor decisions they may have made. In this case, we're going to the end of King David's reign. He's very old, he's very frail, and his time is coming to an end. And just like every person, no matter really how much stature you may have in this world, at least within your family and so forth, you do have to make some kind of succession plans. You make a will, you make some kind of a trust, whatever the case may be, there's plans to be made. And so for him being a king, the question that people are wondering is, who's going to be the next king? Who's going to be the person next in line? Well, 2 Samuel chapter 3 contains a list of 6 sons that he had even before he had become king. And so you would think it would be from this group of 6, they would be his oldest sons, that this would have contained that king. Well, he had some older ones that had died. Absalom, for instance, is in that list. We know that he has died. And so if you look at that list, Adonijah is the one that would make the most sense if you're going by most secular means of selecting the next king. And so in 1 Kings chapter 1, this is where we're going to spend the majority of our time this morning. 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 5, it says, "Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.' And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him." So Adonijah looks around and says, "You know what? I'm going to be the next king. I'm the oldest remaining. So it's going to be me." So he prepares to become king, and I think it's going to be happening here fairly soon. I know over in the UK, they're going to be having a coronation for the new king, King George. Well, that's what Adonijah is setting about to do. He's preparing his own coronation ceremony. He is preparing a party, and he's getting ready to do all this. But, of course, there's a couple things here that we're going to talk about. First of all, his father's not dead yet. His father is still the king. But he decided, it's my time. I'm going to take the king's place, and so I'm going to set about making the arrangements for that. And so, as we're told there in verse 5, he gets chariots and horsemen and men to run before him. I bet those 50 men were not happy to have been picked for that, but they are all being brought into this. And so he gets Joab, who was David's former right-hand man and really his commander, and Abiathar, the former high priest, and he gets them involved in what he's doing. And from what we could tell, they were on board with this. They didn't try to set him straight. At least we're not told that they tried to talk him out of this. And so we find that Adonijah sacrifices a lot of animals for this ceremony, for this feast, and all of his brothers, all the king's sons, and all of the royal officials are invited and do come to this coronation party. Well, when we read the story, we find that no one told Adonijah that he was going to be the king. This was all just him seizing power, taking it upon himself to put himself in this place. But no one with any kind of authority has told him to do what he was doing. No one told him to have this ceremony. No one told him to have this party. No one told him to do what he was doing. He takes it all upon himself. Now, this was not just some innocent misunderstanding or some confusion where maybe David at different times had told one person this and one person that. That was not in play here. Adonijah was doing this all upon himself. 1 Kings chapter 1, verses 9 and 10 makes it very clear that this is what the situation is, that no one in any kind of authority had told him that he was to be the king, because it's noteworthy to look at that list of the people that were invited and note some people who were not invited. Nathan the prophet, who had counseled his father for many, many, many years, Nathan was not invited to this party. Solomon was not invited to this party, nor was his mother Bathsheba. And none of the, well, Benaiah, who was one of David's fighting men, and we're told of the mighty men of David, or so, however referred to, that were known for their loyalty and their faithfulness and their valor. None of them were invited to this. Now, these were all people key and close to David. You would think that if this was nothing that Adonijah was trying to hide or was trying to do on his own, those people would have been invited as well. And so by leaving these people out, it tells you that he knows what he's doing and is probably not what was meant to be done. And if you say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, it's he had a brother Absalom that did something similar, and we know what happened to him. In that was in 2 Samuel chapter 15, where he tried to seize the throne from David. And so maybe it's not an accident. Maybe he said, I saw what he did, and I'm going to do it better. Absalom tried to overthrow. I'm just going to assume. I'm just going to take it over and try to make someone stop me. Maybe that's what his thinking was. But he's looking at his father. His father is becoming older and weaker, and he goes, this is my time. It's time for me to become king. So 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 5, we read it earlier, but the statement in there that is important is that now Adonijah the son of Haggith exalted himself. And verse 5 also says he prepared for himself. So there's no confusion here about what is driving all this. It's Adonijah himself. He's taking this glory. He's demanding respect. He's demanding to be exalted. But no one told him to do so. And there's a Greek word in the New Testament that describes what Adonijah is doing. I'm going to mess this up, but it's a Greek word that's eritheia, E-R-I-T-H-E-I-A. And it really means selfish ambition, meaning all that you're doing is for self. It's not benefiting anybody else. It's for self. And so one thing we can learn from Adonijah is that we're not immune to selfish ambition. We all like to succeed. We all like to put ourselves in the front of the line if need be. And so we want to have people notice us, to pay attention. And I'm talking about as society as a whole, but also individually. We all like to see ourselves get noticed and people to be drawn to us and so forth. And so we do things that we hope will cause us to have influence and cause us to be recognized and be exalted. Maybe not to take the throne, but to be lifted up in someone's eyes. And so that's what Adonijah is doing. And we need to be careful that we ourselves in our daily lives don't on some level look for that same selfish ambition, because that is contrary to what we are called to be. And so looking at that from a New Testament standpoint, if we look to the book of James, James 3, verses 13 through 18, kind of touches on this thought. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And so we're not going to behave as we are expected to be a disciple of Christ if we have this selfish ambition. James calls this attitude, it's an earthly one, it's an unspiritual, and he goes so far as to say it's demonic. That's as far away from what we're called to be as Christians as you can get. It is sinful, and it is totally opposed by the Word of God. This selfish ambition causes trouble. You think about it, troublemakers usually aren't causing trouble on behalf of someone else, though that does happen. Politicians have their ringleaders to stir up, and so they can keep their hands clean of whatever the case may be. But most part, when people are causing trouble, it's to try to advance themselves in some way. And so your heart should not have that attitude, to have this foreign, earthly, demonic approach. Your heart should be seeking God, should seek humility and be submissive. And that is what we are to be called upon to do. Now, going back to our account of Adonijah, there's another thing that we need to look at and pay attention to and realize that it could be something that we could fall into, is that we have to look at, why does Adonijah try to take over the kingdom? We need to look at where his selfish ambition came from. And he doesn't even care that his father's not dead yet. He's not focusing on spending every last waking moment with his father. He's looking to self. And so verse 6 there in 1 Kings chapter 1 might tell us, give us a little bit of an idea. Verse 6 says, his father had never at any time displeased him by asking, why have you done thus and so? He was also a very handsome man, and he was born next after Absalom. What we're told here is that David had, I don't want to say spoiled him, but he hadn't corrected him. He hadn't drawn attention to things that Adonijah might have been doing, that Adonijah shouldn't have been doing. He never called him out for doing something wrong. And the scriptures picture that Adonijah had never really received any kind of discipline. I doubt this verse would have been mentioned here if it happened occasionally, but not all the time. It seems that that was not something that Adonijah ever had been given. And so we have examples all through scriptures of people who don't properly discipline their children, and then their children become a problem for them. And the writers of Proverbs had, Solomon, David's son, had this very thought in mind. In Proverbs 22:15, it says, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Maybe he was looking at what happened with Adonijah when he wrote this, but also we know he was very wise. He didn't have to look solely upon his own family, but I'm sure in some small part, maybe when Solomon wrote that, he realized this could have applied to his older brother. But we learn from David and Adonijah that discipline is not being mean to our children. It's meant to protect them. It's meant to educate them. It's meant to bring them into a proper attitude and to not be also selfish. Adonijah never learned self-control. He's never told what he's doing is wrong. So it's not hard to see why he's doing what he's doing. He's just going to take what he's always done. He's always going to do what he's always done. He's taking what he wants. And so David had been exalting him by never correcting him his whole life. And so this is just the next natural step. And so what we can take from today, now I realize that most of us here, none of us here have small children. It's not something we could directly influence, but we have grandchildren and so forth. And so we could advise people that are in our lives that have children that children are spoiled when they aren't corrected. And when children don't listen and they don't obey, that's a very serious problem. And so when children think they're right and in turn maybe turn around and even argue with their parents, whoever saw a kid argue with their kids nowadays? It happens because they weren't corrected at a younger age, and so they feel they are maybe unequal. One of my sisters said, I want my kids to think that I'm their best friend. Well, that didn't work out so much for her, because her children are not what I would call ruly. They didn't follow along because she didn't correct them in this way. And so when Parents even go to the point where they defend or they excuse the actions of their children when they rebel, when they have problems maybe in school or with their friends. They, instead of taking that and teaching them and curbing them a little bit, that's what happens. The children will just do the next thing and next thing and next thing, knowing that they haven't been stopped to this point, and they keep pushing that envelope. And so selfish ambition is growing in a child's heart when they're not corrected, when they're not disciplined. And so that is what is in evidence here when we're looking at Adonijah's account. And so going back to 1 Kings, we're told that Nathan the prophet and Bathsheba, Solomon's mother, find out what's going on. Someone around Adonijah had a conscience and realized that this wasn't right, and somehow the word came to Nathan. The Lord could have told them, we're not, but someone alerted them. And so they go and they confront the king about Adonijah. And there's a very long account here where Nathan and Bathsheba talk about, okay, you're going to go in and do this, and you're going to tell him, and then I'm going to come in behind you and add credence to this. And so they're planning how they're going to approach the king. And so she comes to David and says, didn't you swear that Solomon would reign after you and sit on the throne? And she goes on to say, Adonijah has anointed himself, and basically you need to clear this up. You need to make clear who is going to be your successor. And so she even goes to go so far as to say that if you don't get this taken under control and you don't set it in the proper way, when Adonijah becomes king, he's going to come after me and he's going to come after Solomon, and we're both going to be killed. And if you don't think that's what would have happened, well, then you don't know much about, you know, royal history down through the years. And this surely would have been something that had occurred. And so it's important to realize that Israel, up to this point, had not chosen its kings. God had always chosen his king. And this case was no different than when he had appointed Saul or had appointed David to the throne. And we're told who God wanted to be the next king in 1 Chronicles chapter 22, verses 9 and 10. Behold, a son shall be born to you and shall be a man of rest. I will give him rest from all his surrounding enemies, for his name shall be Solomon, and I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days. He shall build a house in my name. He shall be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish his royal throne in Israel forever. So after speaking to Nathan and speaking to Bathsheba, David reiterates what he had been told and what he had said earlier, that Solomon, according to what God had told him, would be the next king. So we're told that Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaiah the mighty warrior, and the other mighty men, basically all the people that were not invited to Adonijah's affair, come and they go down and meet with Solomon, and they are then going to anoint him to be king. And when this happens, we're told that there was great rejoicing, and there was music making and just joy all around, and he is officially made king. Now, we don't know where Adonijah's party was, but either he was close enough that he could hear this celebration, or the celebration was just so loud it could be heard all around. But whichever is the case, Adonijah hears what's going on, and he must have sent someone to go find out what's going on, and word comes back that David has made Solomon king over Israel, and the city is rejoicing over that appointment. And so verse 49 is a very telling verse in this story. 1 Kings 1:49 says, then all the guests of Adonijah trembled and rose, and each went his own way. When your popularity and your power is gone, and you're not able to do things for people anymore because you were going to be king and there were people maybe going to be beholden to you, when that happens, the party's over. In this case, it's literally over. He has been completely humiliated.
what he had appointed for himself, which was to become king, is not going to happen. Solomon has been made king. He's now all alone. The guests have left. There's a big mess to clean up, and he is not king. Now, Adonijah had the same thought that Solomon and Bathsheba had. If he had become king, he's now worried that Solomon is going to put him to death. And so he goes to the altar, and he puts his hands on the horns of the altar in an effort to spare his life. And so Solomon is told that that's where he's gone. And Solomon says, all right, I'll allow him to live on the condition that he proves to be a worthy man. That's the wording that's used there. But he says, if wickedness is found in him, well, then he will die at that time. And so if we go further on, I think it's the next chapter in 1 Kings chapter 2, we're told that Adonijah went to Bathsheba and asked her to go speak to Solomon on his behalf, that he could take a wife, and he mentions the wife that he wanted. And it doesn't explain it fully, but I think you can kind of tell from the reaction that Solomon had was that this must have been a family member, maybe of some importance, that if he had become the son-in-law to this person, maybe there could have been some way to overthrow Solomon. And so Solomon, and I have to think that it was probably the right assumption. He was wise and had God with him and all that, and he realized what was going on. And so in his eyes, Adonijah did not live up to be that worthy man, and he is put to death because of that. And so the story of Adonijah represents an important truth that's found all through the scripture. And a couple verses that kind of cover it. Proverbs 11 verse 2, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. 1 Corinthians 10:12, therefore let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. And 1 Peter 5:5, clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. I think Adonijah failed to meet those four, I want to say definitions, but those four concepts, those thoughts that we should have in our lives. He failed all those miserably. His foolish attempt to exalt himself and become king stemmed from the selfish ambition that was in his heart, that was just a poison flowing through him. And it's a poison for us if we, as living our lives as a Christian, if we try to have that selfish ambition, it will destroy us. Maybe not having to have us to beg for our life like he did, but it could have us begging for our spiritual life. And so we need to look at ourselves and not take glory upon ourselves and put ourselves on a throne of our own making. And we need to work to give other people the adulation and so forth that may be due to them, and not have it point to ourselves. And so we're to live for the glory of God, not for our own glory. And we don't seek the praise of others, but live to praise the Creator to whom we all serve. I forgot to look for the... I do this all the time. Gary, would you mind just lead us in a prayer, and then we will be dismissed to our class.